So we will discuss S receiver functions, but not the technical problems, but results. So P receiver function contains mostly, and is mostly interesting because it contains converted phases from P to S. But you can also use conversions from S to P, and that is S receiver function. One difference between P and S receiver function is that piercing point at the discontinuity is at a larger distance from the receiver. So if the discontinuity is in the transition zone, the distance can be on the order of several hundred kilometers, sometimes up to 1,000 kilometers. And this should be always taken into account. So one problem with P receiver function is that each conversion follows by multiple reflections. Unfortunately, the strongest discontinuities in the Earth are near its surface. It can be a transition from sediments to hard rock, or it can be MOHA discontinuity. And then you have strong multiples, and it's difficult to detect signals, the converted phases from big discontinuities in the mantle. But in S receiver functions, these reverberations come much later than conversions from the deep boundary, and it's a big advantage of this approach. There are other important things as well, but we will not discuss them. Oh, sorry. Now I want to show what S receiver function is. So I'm a little bit scared to switch off the computer because we may lose it after that. But that is an example of S receiver function for the station Obninsk. And that is very typical S receiver function. So it's a result of combined processing of about 100 of events. So it's not one event, but in condensed form, you have a lot of data. So you have several traces, and each trace has its own differential slowness. We stack the data with move-out corrections to detect the phases which have a slowness which is different from the incoming wave. So the converted phases have positive slowness, they're a bit slower than the incoming wave. So what you see here, also what is important, you don't see S wave here because we rotate the system of coordinates, and so S wave is not seen. But if it was present, it would be, the size of it would be comparable to the size of the screen. It's much, much larger. So what you see here is a conversion from the MOHA at a time about minus 5 seconds. The negative motion in our sign convention means that the discontinuity is positive. And then you have the signal from 400 kilometers discontinuity, and practically nothing else. This is most likely a side lobe of the MOHA conversion. So we always control the signal to noise ratio. We evaluate the noise. So we interpret only the signals with a large signal to noise ratio. But there is one very robust and simple criterion, is the presence of the signal from 400 kilometers discontinuity. This discontinuity is fairly weak, 0.2 kilometers per second for S wave, and it controls the amplitude. So if we see this signal, then it means we have sufficient sensitivity to detect discontinuity of this strength. So we see this conversion at most of our data. So it's very, very stable. Just another example. So it's another station, Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine. And again, you see more or less the same structure, the signal from the MOHA and the signal from 400 kilometers discontinuity. And there are many other data like, yeah. It's a differential slowness. So you see 400, usually the slowness, at the differential slowness 0.6 second per degree. So it's a bit slower than S wave. It's the same amount of, about 100. Yeah. And so you practically always detect the signal. And the structure around 400 kilometers usually appears very simple, just the signal and nothing else. But there are data that are very different, and we will discuss them. So this is the data from station Norilsk in Siberia. So we have receiver functions for two azimuths. One is around 90 degrees and the other around 150. So that is a normal receiver function with simple signal from 410. But in the other azimuth you have a large bump following 400. And the sign of this bump indicates that it should be a negative discontinuity. So a velocity reduction over the 400 kilometers discontinuity. So these are different azimuths. That is back azimuth of 90 degrees and that is 150. So they sample different regions. So now we deal with synthetics. We try to reproduce the signal. If we put a standard model like ASK91, we get a synthetic receiver function like this with 410 and nothing else. But if we put a low velocity layer on top of 400, then we get a receiver function like this, which is fairly similar to the observed receiver function. And this map may explain you why in one azimuth we don't see anything unusual and in the other azimuth we have it. So this is station Norilsk, and that huge yellow body is Siberian traps, which were produced by plume, or super plume, 250 million years ago. So when your wave propagates underneath the traps, so you have this structure. So on this, so we processed in this way many, a very large number of stations, and some stations where the signal were noisy just not included. So the number of data is much larger. And those stations where we have this unusual structure as shown red, it's Taman-Raset in Africa. That is, I don't know, what is the name of it? It's rain in Arabia. That station is in West Siberia. Norilsk is here. Then we have a few stations in China and stations in Antarctica. I don't show anything for America. That is still not processed. Just a few more examples. I forgot to mention South Africa. That is station Bosa in the Kapwal Craton, and you have the same feature. That is apparently related to the Karoo traps, gigantic magmatic event 180 million years ago. This station gives us image of the mantle in southern China. Again, strong signal, which is apparently related to emission traps. Then this signal is related to Young Plume, and Tam is in the region of a Hogar hotspot also. The young, relatively young plume. I put 350 just as a label. It does not mean that it's exactly 350. It can be less or more by, say, 20 kilometers. Just a label to discuss the data. Okay. This is just the map with all these plumes. Also, we will look in detail on the data for Antarctica. So here we have a good signal at station Derville in East Antarctica is, of course, a shield. It's Precambrian, perhaps Archean, and West Antarctica is much younger, and it hosts at least a couple of plumes, but perhaps more. So it's well known that East Antarctica is surrounded by plumes. There are geophysical and geological data very consistent with each other. So we have this signal at Derville, and we have this signal at South Pole, and that is just the image of velocities from the paper by Siminski, Debye, and I don't remember all names. So Antarctica is East Antarctica is, of course, cold with high velocities, and it is surrounded by low velocity stuff. Now, one interesting set of data related to the northeastern China. This region is interesting because a paper. The anomaly was actually first discovered by Sipkin, by Revenot and Sipkin, who used multiple SCS reverberation. And they came up with a model, which is with this cartoon. So subducted slab is dehydrated at 400 kilometers. So when the water comes into the mantle, there is melting, and the melt flows into from a subduction zone to North China. And this, I think this cartoon has a very significant effect on the readers. But we should remember that that is an interpretation, and the data have no resolution to show this. But on the other hand, in this region, There are many basaltic fields, some of them very young. Some of the volcanoes are only 300 years old. And this basaltic field extends into Mongolia. For example, that is Doriganga basaltic field, and its main part is Mongolia, where the data were analyzed by Russian petrologists, who concluded that from the helium isotope ratio, they concluded that it should be plume. And so also another piece of evidence is the structure, deep structure of the Sino-Korean craton. It's an Archean craton, but devoid of the high velocity route. So we know that all the cratons have high velocity routes extending to 200 or 300 kilometers. But this craton has no route. And according to all evidence, this route was eroded by plumes that started in Cretaceous. So it's very likely that this anomaly in northeastern China has the same origin as the other anomalies. So I mean they're related to plumes. Also a very interesting piece of data from the paper published recently by Song, Helminger, and Grant. So they used earthquakes shown by beach balls and seismic networks in the western United States. And they observed waves propagating along this pass crossing California and western United States. So in order for the refracted wave reaches 400 kilometers depth, so the ray coming to that depth comes at a distance of about 2,000 kilometers. And these authors observed anomalies which they related to the low velocity, and they put the deepest part of the ray on this map, and anomalous points are shown by large red circles. And the conclusion, again, which was is fairly well known, is that this anomaly is related to the subduction of Farallon plate and back arc volcanism. But if you look at this data, so I took this map from internet, that is just Columbia River flood basalt. And you can see that this very well corresponds to these red circles. In other words, this anomaly is very clearly related to this flood basalt, which is a typical, a classic plume. So what I especially don't like in that paper, that they refer to our earlier work, and they say that we came to the same conclusion, that the low velocity is related to subduction. And that's absolutely not true. So all the cases that we investigated up to now all point that this phenomenon is related to hot spots, plumes, mantle upwelling, whatever word you prefer. And so now the conclusion to this part. So we find a low velocity usually in association with plumes. Then we speculate about the relation of this low velocity to water in the mantle. So in this subject was discussed at length at several talks, so I don't think we should say more about it. So it's the essence of the hypothesis of Berkovich and Karata. But what is important that Berkovich and Karata predict that this low velocity layer should be almost everywhere except plumes, because high temperature reduce solubility of water in the transition zone and increases in the over 400 kilometers. So the difference becomes slight, and this mechanism should not work. But in reality, we observe just the opposite. We find this low velocity only in the region of plumes. Yeah. Excuse me? It's based on the data which I have shown. But to my knowledge, there are no other data so far. Then what is seems to be important is that we find this feature in the region of old traps. And these traps moved since the origin by something like 2,000 kilometers, but the anomalies are still there. So it's very likely that there is a very thick mantle layer which moves coherently with the plate. So that is actually the hypothesis of Jordan, who introduced the term tectosphere. So it seems to be in good agreement with. But also it's important that we don't observe it everywhere, only three plumes. Now, sometimes we observe the same, we observe a low velocity layer, not above 400 kilometers discontinuity, but beneath. That is an example of such data. It's station Yellowknife in northwestern Canada. So you have, or we have, very good signal from 400, and we have a positive signal with positive polarity in front of this signal, which may indicate that there is a negative discontinuity below 400 kilometers discontinuity. So all these stations which show this feature are shown by red, but you should take should understand that the actual conversion points or piercing points are at a distance of several hundred kilometers from the station. So I will show more data. These are the data for afar, the region where this low velocity layer was found first time. So that is the data of station, it's a permanent station ATD. In the azimuth of 90 degrees you have 400 and this fairly clear signal. We have it in the other azimuth, and we also recently analyzed some other data and they confirmed this. So that is the data actually for the region where we are now. So we have a good signal from station Tucson, and its piercing point is here, and a similar signal from station CMB, its piercing point is here. You see that there are hot spots in this region and many other indications that mantle transition zone is anomalous in this area. Yeah, we also have data for station BNG and the other station in this region, but we could not the signal is extremely clear. But we could not understand why is it here, because there is no anomaly in the transition zone, I mean in tomographic map. But it appears that piercing point is the region of this Cameroon volcanoes. So association of this low velocity layer with plumes seems to be evident here. Then, in order to explain this negative discontinuities in transition zone, we tried to investigate if this can be related to anisotropy. Perhaps you know that it was mentioned in one of the lectures that Watzleyite is anisotropic, and it has been recently shown that there is a mechanism which may align the crystals. In that case, so every crystal is anisotropic, but if they are randomly oriented, there is no anisotropy. But in that case, there is a mechanism, like in olivine, which produces anisotropy in a large volume. So we made synthetics for several possible orientation of deformation. And what we found always is that the signal that we observed at about 500 kilometers is too weak to be compatible with observation. So 400 kilometers signal can be taken as a reference. So very often we have negative signal, which is opposite to the observed signal. Here you see positive, but much weaker than 400. And the same in other synthetics. And so we conclude that it is isotropic discontinuity somewhere, which starts somewhere between 450 and 500 kilometers, and velocity reduction is a few percent. An anisotropic model or anisotropy does not contribute much, at least if we trust the model. So it's isotropic effect. Mostly isotropic. Yeah, of course, yeah, sure. Maybe it's written somewhere. That is back azimuth. That is azimuthal variation. No, we take so Tamazi and others published elastic stiffness tensor for deformed aggregate. Watzleyite plus isotropic component Garnet probably. And so we took this tensor and we calculated synthetics to see what is its effect. And it of course depends on how the shear is oriented. It can be vertical, it can be horizontal. Then at large deformation, the foliation plane coincides with the direction of shear. And here we have other examples. But we never get a signal of sufficient strength to explain the observation. In observations, this signal is always, it has roughly the same strength as 400 kilometers signal. So that is the point. You know, the problem is that the amplitude of the signal is too weak. Perhaps in order to see it, one should perform special experiments to put special arrays, to keep it for a long time, to have many signals. But it will not be easy to observe it, because the signals are weak. So now the conclusion to this part. So we find in, at some locations this low velocity layer. So it's hardly an effect of anisotropy, but it's very likely that it's caused by isotropic S velocity reduction. And so I spoke about it with Tom Duffy, and he presented his data indicating that 1% of water in the transition zone may have already a pronounced effect on velocity. So a few percent can be explained by very small amount of water. The other possibility is that you have a higher temperature, then this water is released and it may initiate melting. So it can be related to the presence of water. So, but certainly there are people in the audience who can discuss this subject of water much better than I can. Now, I go to the subject of Lehmann discontinuity. So Lehmann discontinuity, of course, is not in the transition zone. It's at a depth of around 200 kilometers, but it's maybe closely related to the transition zone. So at least to the problem that we find in the transition zone. So this discontinuity is present in the PREM model, but not in other global models. And seismic data related to this discontinuity are very confusing, and there are many ideas about it. So the first comprehensive study of this discontinuity has been made by Lehmann, who analyzed S-wave arrival times in North America and Europe. And so she noted that there is one branch in this data, then the other branch of travel time curve is an offset, so which indicates that there is a low velocity layer and there is a positive discontinuity beneath this layer. So that is, these two papers of Lehmann is the reason that it's Lehmann discontinuity. And so she explained the Lehmann discontinuity, which at that time was not Lehmann, just discontinuity. So she explained it as the base of the mantle low velocity layer. And then there were several other papers, so people tried to explain it by phase transitions, by some unknown changes in chemistry, but they were not successful, and this explanation up to the present. But then after there were many discussions of this subject in 60s, 70s, and 80s, and in 1981 there was one important paper published by Levin, or Levin, I don't know how it's pronounced correctly, Jackson and Ringwood. So in Australia, they observed a branch of high P velocity, and the discontinuity related to this branch was at a depth of about 200 kilometers. So in other words, it was a Lehmann discontinuity. And so they made two models, one like this, the other like this, and they prefer this one. And so what was their point? Is that this velocity is very hard to explain by by any composition. So the conclusion was that it is not isotropic, that it's an effect of anisotropy, this high velocity. And they attributed it to the transition from the moving lithosphere to the underlying mantle, and then in a layer between, so olivine is deformed and becomes anisotropic. So it's a very important paper which is cited in every study of this subject. So this idea, the idea is that, you know, it's a diagram showing effects of azimuthal anisotropy. I don't see the numbers, but there is a slow direction where velocities are very slow. And then there is perpendicular direction where velocity is very high. And so implication is that they made the observation just in this direction. But they never tried to investigate if they have low velocity in the perpendicular direction. And so nobody tried to investigate this. Just everybody accepted this, or not everybody perhaps, but people just accepted this and without any effort to check if there are in reality these azimuthal effects. Then the other interesting development was made by Garty and Jordan, who modified this anisotropic model by Levin et al. And they suggested, so that is cartoon imaging the hypothesis of Levin et al. And Garty and Jordan proposed that the Lehmann discontinuity is the boundary between anisotropic mantle and isotropic mantle. So they assumed a different kind of anisotropy. Anisotropy with a vertical axis, which is usually very helpful in the studies of surface waves, with a slow vertical axis and fast horizontal axis. So these observations were interpreted by Karata as indication that there is a change from dislocation creep in the uppermost mantle to diffusion creep in the lower part of the mantle. So it's only dislocation creep that can align the crystals and produce seismic anisotropy, but the diffusion creep has not. So these are anisotropic models, but it has recently been shown by mineral physicists that this transition from dislocation creep to diffusion creep is not present at that depth. And so everything became even more complicated. So now we try to investigate this subject with this receiver function. So we analyze the data of the MoMA array in the Eastern United States. At this array, we have observations from two azimuths, one in the direction of something like 330 degrees, and the other is like 50. So there is an angle of about 90 degrees between two azimuths. So why we need this array? Because if we analyze the data of one station, piercing points related to different azimuths are at a large distance from each other, and you cannot argue that you sample the same structure, but if you stack the data of several stations, then the sample roughly is the same region, and you can discuss azimuthal effect. So we try to see azimuthal effect predicted by Levin et al. And so here are the data in two azimuths. And in both you see the signal from the Lehmann discontinuity at about the same time and the same amplitude. There are some difference in slowness, but that is related to the tilt of the discontinuity, which is seen in the data. So if you calculate theoretical seismograms, you can predict that in this direction you will have slightly different differential slowness than in this direction. So the signals from the Lehmann discontinuity are very similar and at the same time. Now, if you model receiver functions for anisotropy with a horizontal or slightly tilted axis of symmetry, then you have pronounced changes in the amplitude of the signal in different direction. And if you take the difference of 90 degrees between the observation, you always observe a change of polarity, which is missing in the data. So azimuthal anisotropy is not the case. We also compete. So it is the boundary between isotropic and anisotropic. Yes, anisotropic is above, but if you put it below, you have the same azimuthal effect. It will be seen only in different azimuths, but you always have a change of polarity, or at least significant difference in amplitudes. When you in the medium with azimuthal anisotropy, you change direction by 90 degrees. So we also calculated synthetics for transverse isotropy with a slow vertical axis, which is supported by most observations. And in this case, the signal from 200 kilometers has a polarity opposite to the polarity which is observed. So anisotropic models don't work with this, are not good for this data. So also what is seems to be interesting is that this data were previously analyzed by seismologists who installed the network. And they applied P-receiver functions. So they claim they see something at 270 kilometers. So I don't know if it's clear enough. But what is important is that the depth interval around 200 kilometers, where the Lehmann discontinuity is located, is dominated by reverberation. So there is no possibility to see anything with P receiver function. And S receiver functions, as I told at the beginning, has a significant advantage in this respect. So, and now the conclusions about Lehmann discontinuity. So anisotropic nature of the Lehmann discontinuity is unlikely. Of course, anisotropy is present, but it's not the main effect. And then, alternatively, it can be the base of the mantle low velocity zone. So we will test this it further with South African data. But of course, South African data are mostly interesting for us because there is a station Bosa, which has shown very anomalous structure beneath the Kapval craton. So it is Eastern United States, I think something like 100 kilometers. No, not more. And when you go to the North American shield, so the ray is fairly long, then the data become very noisy because there are sediments or something. And so the data which I have shown are related to the eastern part of the array, which is close to the ocean and where the thickness of the lithosphere is moderate, something like 100 kilometers. So now we go to South Africa, which of course is a very interesting place in many respects. It's the shields which we find there are among the oldest on the Earth. There is a unique dynamics of this region. There are kimberlite eruptions with diamonds. There is a Karoo magmatism, so many different things. So it's a unique place. Also, what is very important, that there are nodules, pieces of upper mantle rock in kimberlite magma. And from this rock, you can evaluate composition and estimate velocities in the mantle, in the uppermost mantle. So it's not just seismic data, but you can check them with the real rocks. It's like in seismic exploration. Analyze the structure from seismic data, and then you can check it by drilling. So it's very important. And it's a unique place on the Earth where it can be done. So you know that in this region there was a large seismic experiment with almost 100 of seismographs. So it's I would say it's a prototype of the US array. And the data were processed with various techniques, and I would say the results are somewhat disappointing. So it is a tomographic map, and that is a cross-section. And so the scale, color scale, so between white and blue is less than 1%. So it's very homogeneous. The only changes are in the northern and southern end, but there is nothing strange about it because these regions are very different from the craton. Then, Alan Levander has shown his P receiver function, and what I could see is a plane MOHA, plane 400 and plane 600, not very interesting data, especially if you take into account the cost of this experiment. Then there were a few papers analyzing the structure with surface waves, and that is with refraction data from local seismic events, and that is surface waves by Priestley, McKenzie, Debye, so interesting group of authors. So Priestley published several papers on this region. In his first paper, he got a well-pronounced low velocity layer with a reduction of velocity starting at about 100 kilometers. But it appears that he did not take into account anisotropy. And so he repeated this a couple of times. And finally, the final model is like this, where the low velocity starts at about 170 kilometers depth. By open circle, they show estimates of velocity from nodules. And you see that the agreement is quite good, except the lowest part. So another model was published by Simon et al, who used many local seismic events observed at the array, and they came up with this model again, a lithosphere 200 kilometers thick, and then a drop of S velocity and a pronounced low velocity layer. Now, we analyze this data with S receiver functions. So we started late, so I still have a few minutes. So these are the data for station Bosa, which I have shown already, and you see this bump, which indicates you that there is a low velocity on top of 410. But there is another station, LBTB, 400 kilometers to the north, and it does not show this feature. So you have 400 kilometers signal, very clear, and you have very clear Lehmann discontinuity at a depth of 200 kilometers. So the structure obviously is very heterogeneous, and 400 kilometers to the north, you already don't see this feature. So, this is Bosa, and that is LBTB. The sources are in that direction, and so piercing points are somewhere here. So, but, okay, now here we put the models for LBTB, which has a pronounced Lehmann discontinuity, and Bosa, where you have this well-pronounced low-velocity layer. But there are many other stations in this region, and we try to use this network. So we divide this network in three sub-arrays, A, B, and C. Now, one of the problem with this receiver function is that in part of the distance interval where you use them, so it's not pure S wave, but a result of superposition of two or three phases with different slownesses, in particular S and SKS. So we use the data, just it's an example of one seismic event recorded at subarray B. And so we stack this data with move-out correction and separate this field into two fields. One related to S wave with a slowness around 10.4 seconds per degree, and the other SKS with a slowness around 7 seconds per degree. So for each seismic event, we have two fields, one related to S and the other to SKS. Now we we are interested in the data. We're interested in all data, but especially in the data of subarray A in northeastern direction, but because the center of the array is here, reasonably, not very close, but reasonably close to Bosa. And we want to see if we will see if it's possible to observe the same anomalous signal in this data, like in Bosa. And that is a receiver function, where you see a huge signal which is comparable in amplitude with MOHA, even exceeds it. Here is a synthetic for our preferred model, And the model is like this, again with Lehmann and velocity decreasing below. So it's not exactly like we have for Bose, but still qualitatively it's the same. So of course this structure is heterogeneous, laterally heterogeneous, and our modeling technique is for homogeneous medium, so we cannot insist that these models are very accurate, but qualitatively I think they are quite reliable. And now let me show you examples of other data. So here we take subarray C for events in the western direction, and we stack both fields, S and SKS. And here, instead of differential slowness, we put depths of conversion. So we calculate move-out correction for certain depth. So what you see here? You see Moha discontinuity, which is the strongest at zero, or maybe 80 kilometers depth. Then you see very clear Lehmann discontinuity, which is focused in a right depth interval. Then you have 410, and that is 660. So instead of velocity reduction at 200 kilometers as in the model, you see that velocity is increasing. This negative polarity means positive discontinuity. Then we stack the data of all wave fields and all subarrays again for the western azimuths and get practically the same structure. Moha, Lehmann, 410 and 660. Now, if we use only A, B, and C, we have more or less the same structure, except that we don't see 400, but have a positive bump, which may be a signal related to this low velocity zone, but of course it's not very strong, and it depends on do you believe in this or not. So there is also something here, but not very clear. And in the northeast, we observe more or less the same feature. Moha, Lehmann, 410, and 660. Also, you can see that waveform of 660 is slightly different than to azimuth. Now, probably the last figure. So when we use subarray C and events from northeast, we observe Moha, Lehmann, and this huge signal. Has anybody an idea what it means? Why is it here? Okay, so we have no time. So the solution is that the piercing point at 480 kilometers is at a distance of about 1,000 kilometers from the center of the array in the northeast. And this piercing point is already in the East African rift zone. And that is the same signal that we've seen at several other locations. And now the conclusion to this part. So SASEC is South African seismic experiments. So we confirm the observations of low velocities above and below 400. The region of large S velocity reduction is probably not large. So if it was 10 kilometers, we would not, on the order of 10, we would not be able to see it. If it was on the order of 1,000, we would see it everywhere, but we see it only in part of data. So it's a few hundred kilometers. So Lehmann discontinuity cannot be the base of the low velocity zone. the zone is missing beneath the Kapler crater, at least at depth less than 200 kilometers. So what is it? So, and then methodologic, some lesson of methodology that when we apply low resolution seismic technique, so we may not only smooth the structure, but produce artifacts like these low velocities, which were advocated by Priestley and others. And so I think it's 1 hour and I finish at this point. Yeah.
When you're first talking about things with flow velocities above the port town.
Yeah.
And you indicated that in most places where you saw something like that, there was some sort of surface ultimately.
Yeah.
Have you gone to, it seems like, could it be, I mean, it's probably a little bit more than a coincidence, but if you could find it, you could probably find surface volcanism in the vicinity of about, of a lot of things.
Yeah, but surface volcanism is can be of different origins. So there are subduction zones, there are rifts, and we find it in the region which most people understand as plumes, or as hotspots, or mantle upwelling. You know, all this terminology is not quite well defined. But at least in those regions where people insisted on subduction, like in Western United States, it's, so of course you can say it's a plume and subduction both, but why you need two reasons if one reason is sufficient? So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Ross, see, yeah. Yeah, there is evidence of upwelling. There is a paper by Siminsky and others where they use high-order modes and say low velocity extends in the transition zone. Then to the north of station Derville, there is, Guy Masters shown his maps of the transition zone, and I noted a very pronounced anomaly in the transition zone depth. Then to the north of Derville, where you have Baleny hotspot, there are data from peer receiver function indicating that the thickness of transition zone is reduced. So it's certainly something that comes from large depth. So I refer to the paper by Siminsky, and they have many references to, including people like Professor Hart, who proposed that it's essentially it's a plume, not just rift, or some mixture of plume and rift volcanism. It's something young, yeah. Okay, I can refer to the paper by Siminski, Debye, and others who made analysis of higher modes, and they insist that the anomalies extend into large depth. Also, the model by Masters shown it. I just noted it. So. Okay, so I think I cannot strongly insist on this for Antarctica, but there are many cases, and if you try to see what is in common between them, then plumes seem to be the best candidate. Beneath East African Rift. So we observe the signal from about 500 kilometers depth, which suggests a low velocity layer in the transition zone. And so we can do it. Why the signal is there? Because a piercing point of this subarray is at a very large distance from the network. It's about 1,000 kilometers. And if we look at a bigger map, then we see that this piercing point is already outside this area, and it's in the area of East African Rift, its southernmost tip. So that might suggest that the origin of this feature is the same as in other regions, that it's somehow related to plumes. Yes. Yes, it's true. But we see the same in some other data. You know, the period of it is very large. It's about 20 seconds, and sensitivity of this procedure is low for such periods. So for this reason, we cannot see variations very clear. So I could pick it at any trace. I just like this one. So the signal looks to be the sharpest somewhere here. But so you see it in all traces. But I should put the mark somewhere. So I put it in the middle.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying, are you just
rotating? So there is something unusual. You should agree. Yeah. I was. Also, that is a good point. So why P-receiver function don't show anything in this region? Nothing substantial. But we see something. It's because we use much longer period. So people who came from exploration, they think that the higher frequency they use, the better resolution they have. But that is only true for seismic exploration, where the boundaries are stratigraphic and very sharp. But in the mantle, it's very different. So you go to longer periods, you lose resolution, but in reward, you get some important things. So this one.
Okay. So the model AS1, what should we take away from it? Can you resolve the gradient or boundaries?
Okay. So I do it very naively. So I try to explain these two bumps in the data. And in order to do this, I put two negative discontinuities. This may be not true because the structure is heterogeneous. So maybe this bump comes from one part of the array and this bump from the other. But what is important that it's very unlikely that you can model this without low velocity over 400. That's my point. That is how I do it. I do it very naively. I have no instrument to model laterally heterogeneous structure. Oh, yeah, but at different depths, yeah. So it's very hard to say what is the little. So Priestley and McKenzie, they argue from the models that the thermal lithosphere, the boundary between the thermal lithosphere where heat propagates in, by conduction, and the deeper mantle, so the boundary is at a depth of 204 kilometers, believe you or not. But at this depth, we have Lehmann discontinuity with increasing velocity. So there is nothing in seismic data which indicates that the transition from the lithosphere to the asthenosphere is at that depth. And that is, you see it in many stacks, not in one. I don't know, unfortunately. Don't know yet. So this work is in progress, so we are preparing it. I still don't know what is it. But what you see here is that this signal, it's comparable in strength with the MOHA. But you can model it with the anomalies of a few percent. So it's...
Model with sharp gradients rather than...
No, it's just... I'm a bit lazy, so I want to put as few layers as possible.